gonna die, clown!
And that's what I call high quality A2O.
I'm Scuba Sam, Scuba Steve's father.
We eat the pig and then together we burn.
Well, I have a microphone and you don't.
So you will listen to every damn word I have to say!
Everyone, and welcome to the Billy Gilmore Podcast, the podcast for the discerning Adam Sandler fan, the podcast for the fan of the Sandman. My name is Wilson Smith, and joining me as always...
Hi, this is Chris Giles.
And Austin Culp.
And we're so excited to have you all with us for this very special episode on Adam Sandler's seminal 2008 film, beloved by audiences worldwide, Bedtime Stories. This is kind of a weird footnote, I think, in Sandler's career, not to diminish it before we even get started talking about it. I think this movie, we'll get into it. We'll get into it. But first, very briefly, just news from Sandler World. I think basically it's just confined to this go-round. The Sandler has re-upped his deal with Netflix to include four more movies. I don't know if that's four more post Hubie Halloween. So Hubie is Hubie's the last one on this current deal.
I believe it's four in addition to Hubie Halloween.
Okay.
So I think we'll technically
I knew that Hubie wasn't included in that deal, but I didn't know if, like, because I feel like I've heard about his deal getting re-upped like a few times, and it's like I don't know if Hubie Halloween is like the end of this, you know, the last re-up of the deal or like whatever. Regardless, Sandler's going to be living on our TVs and in our phones and our computer boxes for a long time. So that's great. He's hitting the ground running post Uncut Gems. Can't imagine what ideas they're cooking up over at the Dream Factory in Happy Madison. So that's very exciting. Genuinely stoked to watch all four of those pictures.
I wonder if they'll all be of the lighthearted comedy fare that has been the case with, you know, all of his Netflix stuff. And, you know, there's certainly variants therein, but, you know, they're all, I would say, all of his Netflix movies are just, you know, pretty, fairly broad comedies. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
With maybe it's like The Week Up being slightly more like intimate, I suppose. But all comedies, and, you know, we're in a post-Uncut Gems world, and that movie, you know, we can complain about it being snubbed at the Oscars, but it's had a wonderful year. It's on track to maybe outgross Lady Bird and be A24's biggest movie ever. So,
Okay, we'll check on that. Keep talking. I'm going to look that up.
But I'm thrilled that we're in February now, you know, and there seems to be no energy lost with just people talking about Uncut Gems and feeling enthusiastic about it. So, blah, blah, blah. To make a long story short, I'm wondering if, you know, these new movies with Netflix, if maybe one of them will be more of the on a dramatic line, or if they'll be more kind of like genial, fun, Happy Madison bunches too. Because, you know, I feel like this might have been a big moment for a lot of like Sandler fans too. I had Bedtime Stories on at the video store today, and someone came in. He was like, "Oh yeah, I forgot about this movie. You know, I had checked out of Sandler for a while there, but Jesus Christ, I can't stop thinking about Uncut Gems."
Right.
I was like, "Yeah, that's
exactly yeah."
What do you think? Do you think Netflix in the next 5 years will also just try to purchase rights to like his entire catalog, just to like make
it
like the Sandler
a good price? Because obviously Happy Madison was with Sony for so long, and I don't know how, you know, if Sony like launches their own like, you know, streaming service or something, if they try to go that route, it might be like a contentious thing. Like they might lean on like using that as part of their back catalog, like the rich back catalog of Happy Madison movies. I mean, it's pure speculation on my part.
Waterboy was when
Touchstone.
So Disney,
right? It's interesting the Sandler movies that are on Netflix currently that are not his Netflix movies.
Mm-hmm. I think isn't Bedtime Stories one of them?
Yes, and that's a weird thing because I went to I had seen it on Disney Plus when Disney Plus launched, and then when I went to Disney Plus today to watch it, it was like this movie actually isn't available because of rights issues. It will be available on Disney Plus on March 5th. Huh. So whatever deal they had with Netflix meant that they still licensed Bedtime Stories through March 5th or whatever, 2020. So luckily I had Netflix too, so I went over and watched it there. But yeah, four more movies from Sandler. It looks like Uncut Gems has not quite outgrossed Lady Bird, but it's still in theaters. And I think I read that they might be putting it back out in more theaters. Like they're doing that move, like with Disney and the Avengers for Avatar, where they were like, well, let's put it back out in theaters, you know, weeks after. Mm-hmm. Damn near a week before it was out on Blu-ray. Like, let's put it back out in theaters so that we can just slightly just push it over that line.
Yeah, the re-release now, I think, is the Safdie's Q&A at the end.
Okay, yes, because I saw a list. Someone was talking about a listing online where it was like, my theater says they're getting Uncut Gems, like an extended version, but does that mean new scenes or what is that? And so, yeah, I think it's the Q&A.
Oh, cool.
So that's exciting. That continues to, that'll probably be A24's highest grossing movie. Don't doubt the Sandman. That's a lesson that we all should learn. The Sandman, the Sandman rules all, and he has, whatever. I mean, A24 hasn't. Yeah, Lady Bird. Well, Hereditary was a big hit. So yeah. I guess 3 years in a row they've had pretty sizable hits. But Uncut Gems gonna outdo them all, baby. The bet hit. And incidentally. The meme potential of Uncut Gems has been thoroughly exploited. People, I keep seeing maybe it's who I'm following or who I'm looking at, but everyone's using
I disagree.
Don't let him in.
Anytime someone says something crazy or stupid, I see people using the reaction face of his brother-in-law in the vestibule. I'm blanking on the actor's name now.
It's Arlo. Bogosian.
Yeah, Arlo is that.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So like just like that, that just sweaty, miserable, just frowny Arlo face
during the before it all. And I promise we will not touch on this any further. But before we knew that the Iowa caucus was going to turn into such a debacle, the night that it was going on, I definitely saw a few memes where it was like. It was like Eric Bogosian in Uncut Gems when it's like looks like the bet is going well and he like all of a sudden stands up and looks like he's excited too. But it was for like Bernie Sanders poll numbers where it's like he's like at 60% and it was just like, oh, like is the bet going to hit? Oh, God. So that was funny.
I've encountered like lots of Twitter threads that don't even mention like Sandler or his character Howard. They're just obsessing over Julia Fox.
Oh, yes. Julia Fox has been a big presence online.
Yeah, and which I think is great because I love her in that movie and her character is certainly very memorable. So I think that's a lot of fun. Yeah, no, it feels, I guess, like validating in a way to see the legs that this movie has, like conversationally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a big movie. It's a conversation piece. It will live forever, much like The Sandman. But something that hasn't had as much longevity 12 years later, really just 11 years later, is the movie Bedtime Stories.
Bedtime Stories.
So we should talk about that. So
from Walt Disney Pictures.
From Walt Disney Pictures. An interesting thing about this movie is that now it's official. Technicality is that I have not seen Hotel Transylvania 3 yet. Mm. But live-action Sandler movies, I have now seen all of them.
Oh, wow.
This was the one holdout. Bulletproof was the other one. It was Bulletproof and Bedtime Stories. And every time since we started this podcast that I thought I had a free moment and I'm just like, oh, maybe I could catch up on Bedtime Stories. And I'm like, no, I should really save the first time for the podcast. So it's been like, you know, almost a year of waiting to watch Bedtime Stories. Really 11 years.
What do you want to do with yourself now?
I should celebrate somehow. I don't know. Maybe I'll watch Bedtime Stories again.
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So had y'all seen this before?
I had not.
Yeah, this was definitely a, whenever I worked at Blockbuster, I didn't work at Blockbuster.
I did
work at Blockbuster, but this was not why I rented it. I rented it because they had this program that was like the Netflix delivery, but you could return it at the store.
I remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so
Listen up, kids.
You could return it at the store and get a movie immediately.
There was a while there when Blockbuster was doing its damnedest to survive, and they had fun little things like that.
Yeah. That's right. Mm. Yeah, it's the Wild Wild West. So this movie... It's 2008, same year as Zohan. This was a Christmas release, a holiday picture. It opened against Marley and Me and The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. And it made, we're still comfortably in that pocket we're actually, you know, the movie after this one is the first kind of speed bump post Little Nicky that we'll hit as far as his like unchecked box office dominance. Because this is still squarely in the pocket of like this movie was a big hit. It made $110 million domestic, did quite well overseas, made like another $50 million like in home video sales. Like it was quite successful. But it is kind of interesting. It's his first PG movie.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, it's Disney. It's directed by Adam Shankman, who, Chris, I know you looked up Adam Shankman earlier. You're looking at his. He's got an interesting career.
He's got interesting filmography of like fair to pleasant movies that you saw and forgot about immediately, or perhaps watched on a plane. But they're all titles that made me go like, oh yeah, that. Oh yeah, that. We have like what? A Walk to Remember, Bringing Down the House, Cheaper by the Dozen 2, The Pacifier.
Bringing Down the House is a loathsome movie.
The Wedding Planner.
The Wedding Planner. A Walk to Remember.
Bringing Down the House, like, I mean, I've...
Rock of Ages.
The Rock of Ages, wow.
And Hairspray. Hairspray is very good.
Oh, Hairspray, yeah. The Hairspray musical. But these are all movies that, like, as I was going through this filmography, it was like, oh, these all feel very much of their year.
Right.
Like, if that makes sense, like... Walk to Remember, like, yeah, no, that's 2002. Bringing Down the House, no, that's definitely 2003. Like, I remember seeing that with my high school friends and I guess kind of chuckling at Queen Latifah's antics, but I've never gotten around to watching that again, nor do I really intend to. I just remember Eugene Levy saying, you got me straight tripping, boo.
It is obscenely racist, that film.
He's currently attached to the Enchanted sequel.
Yeah, but that movie's been on the schedule for like 10 years. Like that, like I don't think that movie's ever getting made.
Is that ultimately going to be like a Zoolander 2 thing where they waited way too long to do it, and then by the time it does come out, everyone just looks exhausted and sad?
Almost certain, yes.
This IMDb... plot for it like seems to take that in, saying like 10 years after her happily ever after, Giselle questions blah blah blah.
You know what, if we do get Enchanted 2 and they bring back Idina Menzel, who weirdly is in the first movie but not as a singing character, which I mean, it's like, you know, it's Idina, but I, you know what, she should just reprise Dina from Uncut Gems.
Exactly.
Why not? Get a little Queen's color in there.
So as you can tell, we're not talking about bedtime stories because there's not really that much to say about bedtime stories, but...
I had a pleasant time watching
it. Yeah, it's totally fine.
It's, yeah.
So I will, as is customary, I'm going to read a little bit from Roger Ebert's review of Bedtime Stories. Roger Ebert seeming to get a little softer on Sandler as we go along, although I think there's a point at which that runs out. His patience runs out once again. From the first and last paragraph, I'm just kind of mashing them together. Roger Ebert gave this 2.5 stars. He said, Bedtime Stories is not my cup of tea, even the saucer. Fairness requires me to report, however, that it may appeal to, as they say, kids of all ages. I am not a kid of any age and do not qualify, but this is a harmless and pleasant Disney comedy and one of only 3 family movies playing over the holidays. And then in the last paragraph... that's about it. The first PG family comedy starring Adam Sandler. Just what you're looking for. Sandler reprises once again his clueless, well-meaning nebbish who wants to be liked. Once again, the character relates best to kids, perhaps because there is so much he can learn from them. Once again, the message is that you have to believe. Apparently, it doesn't matter so much what you believe, just the act of believing is sufficient. Then you can believe you want to see the sequel. Good line.
You know, it's funny because I was... when, you know, just and making our way through the Sandler filmography for this podcast, in the back of my head too, I was like, oh, I'm excited for Bedtime Story, or at least curious about it, because on paper, Sandler Disney movie, with kind of like with like big, like, you know, lavish like special effects and fantasy sequences, wherein also his love interest is played by the great Kerry Russell. That sounds like at least a wild movie on paper. Fortunately, the end result is just not as interesting as that sounds.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this thing's mostly harmless. It's just I can say that it's kind of it's I think because it was a kid's movie, I was expecting it to be more crass. Like, I think I was expecting almost more of like an Old Dogs type thing. And thank God it's a lot more tame than that. It's a lot more sort of it doesn't lean on the scatological stuff or like dumb, like, I mean, there's like a fart joke, but like only like one, maybe two, but like they're not, they don't lean on that too hard. It's mostly just kind of like sweet and goes down pretty easy, even though there's not very much memorable to it. So Bedtime Stories begins with narration, you know, because it like opens up and it's like a storybook.
From one of the popes.
And Jonathan Pryce, Jonathan Pryce playing Sandler's father, is telling the story of how he started a, he has some funny opening narration where he's talking about like, oh, like if you have to go to the bathroom, hold it, you know, whatever. And he opened in Los Angeles a little family hotel, Sunny Vista. And he put his two kids to work in the hotel, and his son Skeeter is very imaginative, you know, coming up with all sorts of crazy ideas or whatever. And then we learn that the hotel's going bankrupt because Jonathan Pryce isn't a good businessman, and so he has to sell to a shady British developer who makes a very odd, I mean, I don't, as the movie demonstrates, there's no way anyone can really hold him to this, and so it's kind of dumb on Jonathan Pryce's part to take his word for it. But this businessman is like, hey, your kid's pretty sharp, like, I'll tell you what, like, if he's, you know, if I'll let him run this place someday. And Jonathan Pryce is like, oh great. So flash forward to the present day, 2008, I suppose, and it is, this mom and pop hotel has become this huge luxury hotel that Adam Sandler, playing Skeeter, is the handyman. He's the handyman of this hotel. We don't actually see him working all that much.
You think you see him, like the first shot of like grown-up Sandler is he's like kind of fixing a table?
Yes.
A coffee table or something?
He mostly just kind of seems to be like people, like people like him. He's just like a friendly guy and like...
Sort of like Deeds.
We encounter him, as like... basically, the concierge played by Lucy Lawless, which I learned moments ago. I kept wondering who that was. The concierge is basically disputing a charge with an old woman who says, like, I didn't drink these liquor bottles. And Adam Sandler is like, what's the problem? How can I help? And she's just like, she basically says a leprechaun took the booze. And Adam Sandler's just like, okay, well, you can just put it on my tab. So he like helps her out. He's a kind guy. It's a save the cat moment.
Yeah. And I recognize the woman playing the like leprechaun liquor lady. So sorry, I should have pulled this up earlier. One moment. It is, Catherine Justin, most notably Mrs. Landingham from The West Wing.
Okay.
Yeah. As well as like a few other kind of like, you always recognize and love seeing her as soon as you see her in anything kind of a thing. So it was nice seeing her pop up here.
This is the second, I guess, well, this is his first of two, at least, movies where he's like, at some point, a hotel owner.
Right. Yeah. I was thinking about that too. And especially because of like the weird, like convoluted, like, well, you get to run the hotel if you jump through these hoops. And it's like, oh, so it's Billy Madison.
Mm-hmm. I was actually thinking of The Week Of.
And The Week Of.
Okay, so three.
There you go. So, yeah. And, you know, maybe Bedtime Stories, if nothing else, if that's a trend in Adam Sandler's filmography, maybe his heartfelt speech at the end with his concept, his pitch for the hotel, maybe that's like his thesis statement on why hotels are great or hotel ownership is great.
Yeah, they let you leave life.
I don't actually understand. We'll get there. So basically, Guy Pearce is there. Guy Pearce... great actor, probably too good for this, but
this movie has a cast.
Yes, it does. Jonathan Pryce is too good for it too. But
well, that's kind of what like I found myself feeling very smitten with like both those guys because they're not acting like they're too good for it.
Oh no, I mean they both bring it. I mean Jonathan Pryce is really only at the beginning. Guy Pearce is really like
just being silly and having
fun. He's really he seems to be enjoying himself, which good for him. He's a great actor. So he's like the smarmy, basically like second in command. He's the Eric of this movie. he's the Bradley Whitford. And he is basically in line to run this hotel chain once the owner, Nottingham, older version of the guy who bought it from Jonathan Pryce. Nottingham is played by Richard Griffiths, who's most well known to most audiences these days as Mr. Dursley from the Harry Potter series.
That's right.
And he is sadly not with us anymore.
That's right. I mean, I know I've seen him in other stuff, but obviously...
Oh, he's been in a lot, yeah.
But, you know, and I could not place him today, weirdly.
Yeah, it's like saying Alec Guinness is Obi-Wan. It's like, yeah, he did a lot of cool things. Yeah. But it's like, we know what he's known for. Russell Brand is also there as a waiter, and this is like Russell Brand. This is the same year as Forgetting Sarah Marshall. So
this is like Russell Brand's pop
this is
year.
This is his year, his like coming out year. And mm-hmm. it's like, I think, and certainly he, before Forgetting Sarah Marshall had come out, he was already cast in this or like already in this. So it was probably just like, you do an Apatow movie, you walk away with that. You're in an Adam Sandler movie. Like you get a great year. And it is. I mean, it's a good one. He doesn't have much to do. He's just comic relief. But he's fine. He's a likable presence. Yeah, there's a little bit of shenanigans where they ask, they're given some sort of presentation about the hotel, and Sandler does a whole thing where he like does a mic check, and he's like, I say Barry, you say Nottingham, and like, I don't know, it's not funny, but you know, it's like, it's a little wacky.
IMDb claims that this Barry name and some other name, Skeeter's like futuristic nickname, are both callouts to Obama.
I don't think so.
I don't. Yeah, that's like
they were making this movie before Obama was like. I mean, he was running, but like this was before he was like the front runner.
2008. Yeah.
Yeah. He would have just been elected a month before this
and
movie came out.
Presumably, this was shot in 2007. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That was one of those. That was also like Obama came up in what Zohan, which was like this.
That's right.
Strange.
Yeah, but those almost feel like 80-yard lines. Like it's like you hear just like, oh, Michelle, she is very cute. Like, but it's like, you know. Yeah. That's off the back of the head of somebody.
I mean, that's a Judd Apatow move.
Right, yeah. Totally. And we learn here, because it's important, Mr. Nottingham is scared of germs and like won't shake Sandler's hand. So we learn that, of course, they're closing the hotel to make room for a super hotel. It's like, yeah, it's like a Walmart Supercenter version of a hotel. He, of course, Nottingham goes back on his unenforceable promise to Jonathan Pryce by giving the ownership of the hotel to Guy Pearce rather than Adam Sandler. And then we also meet in this scene Teresa Palmer, who is playing Violet Nottingham, who is Nottingham's daughter and also very clearly supposed to be like a Paris Hilton. She's like, that's like clearly what her deal is. Like, I mean, maybe there's some Lindsay Lohan in there too. I mean, those would have been the relevant references
right.
in 2008. But like, she's definitely like, you know, paparazzi magnet. People are just like, she doesn't do anything, but like she's famous because people know who she is. And Guy Pearce is dating her. And I guess that gives him a better position to run this hotel. So we learn all those things. And then we have we see Skeeter go to his sister's house to for his the niece and nephew's birthday. Right. Like one who's what's the party for now? Because they're not. Are they twins? I can't remember.
Yeah, this movie doesn't inspire vigorous note taking.
Let's see if it does not say on Wikipedia. So let's just assume they're twins and they're there for the birthday. and he brings like real candy and like cookies and whatever. And all these kids are like eating. Apparently Courtney Cox is a bit of a like health nut. And she's made like wheatgrass cake. And like that's a joke. Courtney Cox, incidentally. I don't remember if we mentioned this on The Longest Yard, but she is a member of the Sandler Squad.
Well, yeah.
She's in this and Longest Yard. I'm not sure if... I don't remember. I could have gone back and re-listened. I don't remember if we made note of that.
Well, we made note of her being in it, but she's only there for pretty much like the first five minutes.
I mean, I don't know if we made note of like she's a member of the Sandler Squad.
Gotcha.
Connection. Mm-hmm. Because I had not seen this movie before.
I wasn't thinking
she had been in anything else.
Yeah. But yeah. This is Sandler movie number two. I'd say she's a part of the squad, right? And she actually gets more to do in this mm-hmm. thing, yeah. which is fun.
And she's also got that like one of his like SNL like key moments.
Oh right, of course.
She's got that great. She has that amazing bit with him where he's parodying the famous Springsteen video. One detail. Again, you gotta find stuff to talk about here. But I thought it was kind of funny that she calls it. She's like, oh, the gluten-free wheatgrass cake, and I was like, I don't remember gluten-free being a thing. in 2008. Like, I don't remember being super aware of that as a thing until like a couple of years later. So like,
I guess they were ahead of the curve.
I guess. I mean, they're in LA, so like, I'm sure. Yeah. That, like, I'm sure that like all those folks in like in Hollywood like were ahead of that curve.
We're a bunch of hayseeds.
Exactly. I like that. So we learned that Skeeter hasn't been there in 4 years, which I don't want to like nitpick every implausible thing in this movie. It is weird considering that there's no bad blood between them. It seems he didn't like Courtney Cox's husband, who is no longer around.
All right.
But that guy is such an afterthought, and we never see him in the movie. He's mentioned once or twice, but like it doesn't. Basically, Sandler seems to do great both with his sister and these kids, so it doesn't really track why he wouldn't be in their lives.
4 years is a long time.
4 years is quite a long time considering they live in the same city.
Yeah.
So that's weird. But anyways, I like that Sandler gives, it has to be a birthday because he gives them presents, and it's all presents from the hotel. He gives them a shampoo. Well, he gives one of them shampoo and soap, and the other a clothes hanger and a towel. And Courtney Cox, who is the principal at her kid's school, announces that the school is being closed and she's getting laid off. So she has to go to Arizona to look for jobs. And can Skeeter please take the kids? He makes her say, "Skeeter is the coolest. I am a nerd." And she says it.
Do people often just travel to Arizona for jobs?
Yeah,
is that like the teacher haven there where people can just find a job?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's so many, you know, there's a school in every corner in Arizona. They're just begging for teachers over there.
What you gotta do in this economy?
Absolutely. I like that. There's a bit where he fist bumps with a kid that I remember. I wrote down that I laughed at, but now I'm having a hard time remembering what the joke was. And he says, he fist bumps his nephew. He makes the kid laugh by saying, "I don't know anything about plants except that you try to make cakes out of them." And the kid laughs and he's like, "All right, I'm going to go out on a big laugh." And he leaves. Goes outside, and who should accost him there but the delightful Carrie Russell.
Yay!
Who is basically Courtney Cox's friend, a teacher at the school, our slumming love interest for the purposes of this episode. Mm-hmm. And she is chastising Sandler, quite rightly, I might add, that he and his hotel truck are parked in two spaces. They're taking up two spaces, so she had to park like around the block. Extremely inconsiderate of Sandler. I hate it when people do this. Good on you, Carrie Russell. It's important that you call that out. So solidarity. He explains that because he wants to protect his work truck, he wants a buffer zone, basically. Learns that she is going to be taking care of the kids during the day while he, you know, is working, and then he takes the night shift. There's a whole discussion about how, like, she, you know, he turns his truck on and she's just like, "Oh, I bet you that's good for the environment." And he's just like, well, we can't all have Priuses, which Prius was like the go-to, like the buzzword for like environmentalists back then. So it's like, "Oh, we can't all have Priuses." And she says, "How'd you know I have a Prius?" And he just says, "Your whole aura reads Prius." there's a weird bit. They don't run with it as much as they seem to at the beginning. Like, they seem like they're about to, but there's a weird bit where people comment on his hair, and I couldn't tell anything unique about his hair other than it's a little bit fuller.
It has like more poof to it.
It has but slightly.
Yeah.
I kind of saw it like in a certain light where it's like I want to say like a faux hawk, but it's very, if you had like a guard on the side, it's like very low, and then he's grown it out on top. So it's kind of got like a mohawk look to it. It stands out to me throughout the whole movie. It's just like, this is a little weird.
Okay.
It looks like a guy with basically, with like a bad haircut,
I mean,
I guess.
Came from Zohan though, where he had like crazy hair, like, you know,
silky,
like,
smooth
hair. Yeah. She says something about his hair, and he says, "Haven't you heard Goofy's the new handsome?" We get our first, as far as I can tell, we get our first product placement watch of the movie, when he, holds out some Cinnabon and like the kid runs up and snatches it and runs away.
That's about right.
So soon after that, we cut to him in the kitchen of the restaurant talking to Russell Brand. And, there's some Kingsford charcoal very prominently placed in between them. He's just talking to Russell Brand, and Russell Brand is, I don't even know, the scene ends with him throwing fries on Russell Brand, and Russell Brand being like, you don't get it, I love fries on my head. I wrote in my notes Russell for both Russell Brand and Kerry Russell, so this is going to be tricky. So Sandler goes to pick up the kids for the first night. Kerry Russell and them are making signs to save the school. Sandler is distraught to learn that there's no TV in his sister's house. You know, they don't let him eat junk food, don't let him watch TV, all that sort of stuff. There's another reference to his hair.
Kind of hell is this?
Yeah, there's another reference to his hair where Kerry Russell says, I don't think anyone should touch that hair. And that's when I wrote, what is the deal with his hair? I don't get it. So they're like, Uncle Skeeter, you could read a story to us. I'll say, this was one of the biggest laughs I got from the movie. He reads the book. He picks up these books, and one of them is Rainbow Alligator Saves the Wetlands, and the other is The Organic Squirrel Gets a Bike Helmet. And he just goes, I'm not reading these communist books to you guys. And here's where we meet one of the most prominent characters in the movie, a triumph of digital effects. I'm referring, of course, to Bugsy the guinea pig.
Oh.
Bugsy the guinea pig is suddenly perched on top of Adam Sandler's head. And when Adam Sandler, this is a big trailer moment, Adam Sandler picks him up off his head and pulls him, and he looks at his face, and he actually kind of gives like a goo, like old school, like Billy Madison moment, because Bugsy's eyes are they're CGI'd to look gigantic. They take up like a huge portion of his head. I laughed at Sandler's reaction. So Bugsy's there. That'll be important later, I guess. Sandler decides to tell them a bedtime story. Just make something up. Adam Sandler, it's like ye olden times. It's like, you know, like a medieval setting, or like, you know, the castle from Your Highness. Adam Sandler is a knight. Until they change the story, and it's like, actually, he's not a knight. He's just like a nice guy that, you know, was promised the castle but didn't get it. We see in this scene, Jackie Sandler walks up and hands Adam Sandler a hat, and he puts it on. And I would bet, I couldn't find this, but I would bet good money that that is his actual daughter that she is holding.
Yeah, I saw that on the trivia.
Oh, okay, great. Is it Sadie or?
I believe it. So Cameo, Jackie Sandler and Sadie Sandler.
Okay, there you go. So Jackie Sandler. I know. I've seen enough of these Sandler movies now, and now that I know what she looks like, now like she sticks out like Waldo. It's just like oh god, Jackie Sandler going by. So you've got basically like a whole like court situation where Nottingham is the king. Sir Fix-a-Lot is Adam Sandler's character. You got Guy Pearce as Sir Buttkiss. Kerry Russell is... So as they're telling the story, things are changing, you know, as the kids, like, improvise. And Kerry Russell shows up, first dressed as Tinkerbell, which... Well... I won't say that it was unappealing. And then she gets turned into a horrific raven, which like instantly killed whatever enthusiasm I had for the previous Tinkerbell look.
I actually laughed at that bit. The raven switcheroo.
And then she's a mermaid, and it's like, all right, fine. But you know, it's Sandler's telling the story. It's kind of like airing out his own grievances, where it's like Sir Buttkiss gets made the leader. Sir Fix-a-Lot moves into a shoe and gets a case of athlete's face, and is eaten by crocodiles. And when the kids complain and they're like, that's not a happy ending, Adam Sandler says, there aren't any happy endings in real life. So they convince him to change the story, where the king offers Sir Fix-a-Lot a chance to win his castle. You know, he wins it. They play Don't Stop Believing, or they give him that chance. They play Don't Stop Believing. Everyone dances around. There's a part where Kerry Russell's mermaid does like a dolphin dance in the fountain that is really upsetting, like to look at. Ditto the part where the two kids do the Irish jig, but it's like all sped up. Like it looks like something from Jacob's Ladder.
is this the story where he's under emaciated or? There's like an underappreciated.
I think, yeah, under demiciated.
Demiciated.
Yeah, under demiciated, yeah. Yes. They like mispronounce it. Yes. Yeah. They say under demiciate. And Also, the kids add the thing of, like, it's raining gumballs. It rains gumballs at the end. And Sandler's like, what? You know, okay. So the next morning, Skeeter makes whatever food he can for them, which ends up being banana on top of rice cake with wheat germ, which he then, to make it palatable, pours toothpaste on top of it, which, like, Jesus Christ. He goes in to work, and Mr. Nottingham asks him to fix his TV. So inexplicably, Sandler leaves the kids with Teresa Palmer.
Teresa Palmer, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Incidentally, I worked on a film with Teresa Palmer. Lovely, lovely, lovely person.
I wanted to ask you.
Very good actress.
I wanted to ask you about that.
It's a, you know, I don't feel like I don't see her enough in movies. Yeah, on Knight of Cups, she was famously the one that Christian didn't realize that she was an actress, because, like, Terry was so, like, would bring in so many people, like, you know, just like, you know, and she's the part that she's playing, Christian just thought she was that, and he was just like, she's a great actress, Terry, and Terry was like, I know, it's Teresa Palmer.
Have you seen Bedtime Story?
Have you seen Bedtime Story?
You dingus.
So anyways, he asks her to watch the kids. Sandler goes in to fix the TV. The lights are all off because apparently germs reproduce faster in light. And we learn that the big idea that Guy Pearce has had for this new hotel is that it has rock memorabilia in the lobby. And Sandler immediately is just like, oh, like the Hard Rock Hotel. Well, Richard Griffith somehow did. I mean, pretty sure they have Hard Rock Hotels in England. But somehow he has not heard of this concept, even though he's in the hotel business. And so he's just, it's like Mr. Skin in Knocked Up, where he's been scooped. And so he tells Adam Sandler and Guy Pearce that, oh, Adam Sandler, you have a chance. If you come up with a better idea for the hotel than Guy Pearce, then you will get to run it. And you can tell you can present your idea at my birthday party this weekend. Like, okay, sure. Like, for the purposes of a movie, that's how it works. And yes, and that's when, and so we notice in that scene, basically, the boss, when he's talking to Guy Pearce about Sandler, he says underdemisiated, and Sandler like clocks it. He's like, wait, like, did he just mispronounce it the same way that my nephew did? That's weird. So that's first indication something's off. Oh, and downstairs, the kids are talking to Teresa Palmer, and Teresa Palmer is saying, basically the boy says, like, he has a crush on an older girl, and Teresa Palmer is curious about that. So, anyways, Carrie Russell comes to pick up the kids to go to school. Sandler's in his truck, rocking to Rock Me Amadeus. And
that was a big trailer moment, I feel
yeah.
like.
Yeah. And then a very hot girl pulls up in a Ferrari with Sandler squad member Alan Covert.
That's right.
This is a Happy Madison movie. He insults Sandler, saying like he could never buy a car like that.
If you save up every paycheck you make, you might be able to one day at the end of your life afford my muffler or something like
yep,
that.
Yep, that's right. basically, Sandler, like, he gets caught in a downpour of gumballs. and it's like, oh, wait a minute. This is exactly like the story that my niece and nephew told. Oh, my gosh. And then we see that it's actually like a truck has crashed on the the highway above him, and it's spilling out the back. So it's like a weird, like, it's weird how this movie approaches. Like, I can't quite figure out what the movie's conceit is. Like, what's the mechanism by which these wishes are coming true? Because sometimes they don't seem to come true the way that. Like, sometimes things just don't happen at all. I mean, like, the Ferrari thing. It's like, well, that just, like, I mean, he got that Ferrari in that other dream, in that other story, and, like, he just doesn't, like, in the actual thing. And, like, even though the kid, I don't know, whatever, it's weird.
Yeah, and the one thing that just bothered me was just the way that truck did, like, jackknife on the highway, because it was like, there's no space for it, which product placement, I believe that was all double bubble, like,
I couldn't tell.
For some reason, I don't understand this either. Like, the 18-wheeler just opened up.
Right, yeah. Like, oh, yeah, the back is like the door just like
wide open
or something.
And all the cases are ripped open.
Yep.
Like, I don't know what accident does that.
Mm-hmm. Guy Pearce has something. We cut back. Guy Pearce is doing some sort of scheme with Lucy Lawless, the concierge. They're sort of like having a thing, even though Guy Pearce is with Violet Nottingham. Kerry Russell brings the kids to the hotel where Sandler is living. It's like the same little bungalow, like house area that the original hotel that his father owned was made of. Russell Brand's there. Russell Brand is like questioning the kids, like, oh, like you've never had a hamburger. Like, you know, oh, it's life changing. Like, and he's like video game. And the one of the kids is like, video game. We're not allowed to play video games because they rot your brain. And he's like, oh, no, like I played video games my whole life. And look at me. Yeah, maybe your mom had a point.
It's like they just carved out a little bit of space in this movie for him to be Russell Brand.
Yes.
Like it's
that's always the Russell Brand thing. I did like that he kind of waxes rhapsodic about bacon. And that's funny to me because Russell Brand is a prominent vegan now. He was not at the time, obviously, but like now, like as a vegan myself, I know this about him, that like he's like on the front lines of this stuff. So it's like, oh, that was kind of funny. Like someone a jerk could throw that in his face at some point.
Boosh it, boosh it, boosh it, boosh it.
So then he tells them another story, and this story is a Western story. He's playing Jeremiah Skeets. He doesn't like his horse because it farts. Thankfully, I think it's the only fart joke in the movie.
And once again, I'm sorry, like, you just running down the plot and like these fantasy scenarios, it plays better somehow on paper than it does watching this movie.
Yeah, it doesn't really pop the way that it should.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Because just listening to you, like, oh, yeah, this movie's fun, isn't it?
Right.
But I didn't have this much fun watching it earlier. I don't know.
This is how much I'm into this movie. I rewatched that scene real quick. It was not double bubble or whatever I said. Reverse the product placement.
Well, yeah, because I thought I did kind of glance at that truck to see if it was anything. I couldn't read the writing. We see another Sandler squad member, Rob Schneider, playing a Native American. Now, this is not as bad as it could have been. It's not good. But it's not as bad as it could have been.
It's one of those it comes up in the movie and you're like, yeah, this might as well happen.
Yep. So Sandler is like testing out the boundaries of this whole bedtime story conceit. And so he's saying, like, he tells this story of like, oh, like, can I get, it's like he wants a car instead of his like shitty truck. And so within the story, he's manipulating it to be like, well, if I like, oh, can I have your finest horse, like your most expensive horse? And it's the horse is called Ferrari and it's painted red. And Rob Schneider is like, I'll give you the Ferrari for free. This is the funniest part of the movie, is this running joke where every time Sandler or Schneider talks about getting the car or the horse, they go for free. It's just a silly voice. Yeah. It's pretty funny.
It's the first thing that pops up if like you search for like bedtime story GIF or something. Like clearly it's, for whatever reason, I don't know, in the writing stage, they settled upon this bit. And it's fun.
And then the kids don't want that to be the end of the story. And so they contrive, like, Teresa Palmer is being beset by bandits and he rides in and saves her from them. When he drops her off in town after rescuing her, she's like, I need to show my appreciation. She pronounces it appreciation. I need to show my appreciation somehow. And he's like, I'll take $100 million. The kids are like, he wouldn't want that. And then she's like, well, how about a kiss? The kids write in that he gets kicked by an angry dwarf who rides off in a little tiny wagon with tiny horses and other dwarves. And
that becomes a joke, right? Every time, like, every time he goes for a kiss, like the kids like throw some crazy bullshit at them.
Yes, I feel like so, and I don't think I paused it or went to go to the bathroom or anything like that during it. I feel like there's a scene missing here where like there needed to be a point where Sandler, the way he does with Click, when he's just like, oh my god, like I realize what I can do with this remote. Mm. Like he seems to kind of accept what's going on pretty casually, and there's not even much made of it. Like it's like, oh, like that's the it's on some level it's refreshing because it's like, well, that's the conceit of the movie, you saw the trailer, like we're doing it.
Yeah,
but it's also just kind of like, I feel like you need a moment where he's just like, get the hell out, like what, like, yeah, I mean, no, that's the bubblegum moment is like the closest, but again, he seems to accept it all pretty fast.
Maybe ultimately that's where you feel like the biggest like shrug with this movie. It's not that it's bad. It's more like, oh, with this premise, this could have been something.
Right. A lot, it could have been a click.
Like, yeah.
So anyways, Sandler goes in real life to a Ferrari dealership, and Rob Schneider is there, not playing a Native American. And Rob Schneider, like, there's just a thing where Sandler is like, I guess he saw Rob Schneider in his own in the bedtime story. Like, I guess Rob Schneider looked like Rob Schneider because he sees this guy who looks exactly like the dude who he invented in this dream. And he's like, oh, are you here to give me my Ferrari? And the guy's just like, yeah, sure. For free. And he's just like, yeah, man, and close your eyes. And then Rob Schneider, he robs him, of course. And Sandler, driving in his truck, sees Teresa Palmer being accosted by paparazzi. He pulls over and saves her by splashing water all over them, but not her, somehow.
Yeah, he does like a 180 with his truck.
Yeah, he does a Dominic Toretto and just like flips his truck around. And also, he does something, I don't remember. Oh, he like makes his truck backfire, and somehow that gets all the paparazzi to drop their extremely expensive cameras.
Yeah, because he's got a power drill that kind of has like the silhouette of a gun.
Right.
And then he just like hits the gas and just like makes it pop.
And they all drop their cameras and run.
I mean,
presumably some of these people have like seen War Zones or something, but no. So she gets in the car with him, and he takes her and drops her off at her car, and he's like, oh, she's like, I have to show my appreciation somehow. And she leans in to kiss him, and what should happen but an angry dwarf wearing a fraternity shirt comes up and kicks him in the shins. And this dwarf is just like, it's almost a really funny bit, because like, it's like a car full of extremely angry little like bros, essentially. Like, they're all just like, yeah, big people suck. And it's like, okay, like that almost should have been a running gag. Like, that could have been funny.
Bunch of little O'Doyles.
Exactly. And then he sees that she has a red Ferrari, and he interprets that as, oh, I'm gonna get, she, he's like, oh, you're gonna give me that for free? And then she's like, okay, you're crazy, and she leaves. And then he realizes, oh, it's when the kids tell the story, not me, that's when it comes true. Back at the hotel, the kids are watching, correct me if I'm wrong, The Suite Life of Zack and Cody. So I don't know if that counts as Sandler Squad, but Cole and or Dylan Sprouse are on the screen.
It's worth noting.
Right. It was intentional.
Yeah. Yes. I liked that in this scene they have Bugsy on the treadmill to burn hamburger calories because he's gotten fat. I appreciated that. It reminded me of the mouse from Spirited Away that also runs on the little wheel. That was funny. There's a bit where that only comes up twice in the movie, where Russell Brand has a sleep panic disorder where he just wakes up screaming. And Guy Pearce shows up, insults Sandler's father, says like, you know, you don't know how to run a business any more than your father did, blah, blah, blah. And then We learn somehow that Guy Pearce goes to, this is such a sweaty, to borrow a term that's, you know, used by another podcast, this is such a sweaty plot development,
mm-hmm.
but the notion that the new hotel is going to be built on top of the school that is closing that the kids go to, like, that's such a weird, sweaty development to, like, merge these two plots, that, like, I don't, and like, they just, like, you know, they hand wave it away, like, oh, the old man pulled some strings with the Board of Education, and it's like, okay, fine,
sure.
The kids and Carrie Russell are out on, and Sandler out on the hotel roof making s'mores. The kids have never had s'mores. They look at constellations. There's a pyramid, there's a camel. Bugsy is in the sky with these huge eyes. The little girl asks, is my father coming back? And like, it's like the movie's like, are we going to try this? Are we going to try? No, we're not. Nope, sorry. Like, does that matter? Nope, I guess it doesn't. So that night, Skeeter tells another bedtime story involving the Roman Colosseum and Skeeticus. He's riding his chariot around like crazy. He rides his chariot over a bunch of elephants, Evel Knievel style. Bugsy is also there, like, standing amongst the elephants that he rides over. And let's see, the kids like keep telling the story, and it's like, oh, he goes to a tavern and all the people there are girls who made fun of Skeeta Kiss when he was younger. And then they weirdly, because it's a kid writing the story, they all just do the hokey pokey randomly. And then they go onto the beach and Skeeta Kiss sees a fat, hairy man who has something stuck in his throat. And so Skeeta Kiss saves him by, like, I guess, a kicking his stomach and a fish coming out.
Sure.
And the kid continues to tell this story, and he's just like, yeah. And they go to a cave, and Abe Lincoln is there. And Adam's like, wait, what? What? No, no, okay. So the next day, he assumes that the story's going to go that way. He thinks he's going to run into Nottingham. So he goes to the beach, calls her. She's not there. But who should he run into but Carrie Russell?
Hey.
They go to lunch together. All these women are there who made, I guess they all just hang out together and they're still friends and they all live in the same city. All the women who were, who made fun of Sandler in high school are there. Sandler, I thought this was funny. I had to turn on subtitles to hear it, but when Sandler is just like, can you please pretend to be my girlfriend? And Carrie Russell says, I don't feel comfortable doing that. And he says, I'll convert my truck to biodiesel. And she goes, okay. So they're all shocked that he is dating her, and they're like, you know, we were really horrible to you in high school. And then they all start doing the hokey pokey, like marionettes dancing on strings. It's very scary. It's very upsetting. He and Carrie Russell are walking on the beach. He realizes it's his last night that night with his kids. His last night to figure... He's not trying at all to figure out an idea for the hotel. We're given no indication that he has a good idea. It vaguely seems like he's just relying on the kids to give him a good idea. But even that's not really stated.
Right.
So they're on the beach. They find this fat man who, as promised, is lying there, like, sort of not breathing. And Sandler just nonchalantly goes and, like, kicks him, like, just shoves his foot down onto his huge belly. Fish pops up out of his mouth and Sandler grabs it in midair. And Carrie Russell's just like, look at you. And it's like, I think there'd be a bigger reaction than that, probably.
She's a pretty chill lady, though.
Yeah. They go under the boardwalk, and Sandler realizes, like, oh, this is the cave they're talking about. And he's like, wait, you're the fairest in the land. It's you. Something's about to happen. Like, Abe Lincoln's about to show up. And a penny falls from the boardwalk, you know, in front of them. And he's like, that's what it was. But he's already scared Carrie Russell away. She doesn't want to have that kiss with him. And he's just like, I mean, he doesn't seem that bummed about it. Just kind of like, oh no, like I screwed up.
The movie feels very low stakes.
It's extremely low stakes.
Even when there are like stakes, like, you know, like a school might get demolished, but you didn't really, no.
Yeah, Billy Madison is like JFK compared to this. It's just like, whoa, like this is a big deal. So back at the hotel, the kids are practicing shaving. Russell Brand is there. Russell Brand admits he can't read. And Bugsy the guinea pig laughs. I also noticed that Russell Brand is sleeping in the room with them, and I just wrote, where does he live? So then they tell this story, this, you know, this final story before the big day. And it's a space story where Skeeter, I don't remember what his name is at this point, but he's playing like this mighty warrior in like basically like a zero-G space arena. It's a little bit like Tron Legacy when they play Disc Wars. Like it's like that the huge like spherical arena, and of course, you know, it's the same. It's usual suspects who are there in like the story. You've got Nottingham as like the leader. You got Guy Pearce as like the rival fighter. Russell Brand is like a robot who's a translator for Skeeter, because Skeeter, they say that he speaks only gibberish. So Sandler gets some good old fashioned Sandler gibberish in, which is funny. I always appreciate it when he does that. Yeah, that sort of thing.
Skemaloo.
And so he fights a zero G battle against Guy Pearce, and at some point a booger monster is unleashed, and it kisses Guy Pearce and then crushes him. Therefore throwing the fight to Skeeter. They cut to the crowd. Buzz Lightyear is in the crowd, but it's like a mascot that you would see at Disney World version of Buzz Lightyear. And that was total. I know it's Disney. I know Disney made this movie, but it was still such an utterly baffling, like, little cameo. Like, okay.
That's
like,
not a choice to make.
And then the big thing is that someone throws a fireball at Skeeter and incinerates him. And, you know, Sandler is just like, oh, no, like, you know, like, you can't end the story that way. Like I can't, like, burn up at the end of it. Then we have Guy Pearce going to the school just to tell Kerry Russell, where it's kind of unclear how Guy Pearce knows Kerry Russell or how right. he knows that she has a connection to Sandler or that it would hurt him. But he tells her, like, this is the lamest part of the movie, the half-assed bit of like people being mad because they think Adam Sandler had something to do with the hotel being built. Why would a handyman have anything to do with where this hotel, even if he's vying to build it eventually? It seems like it would be the easiest thing in the world for Adam Sandler to explain, like, I didn't know this. Once I become the manager of this thing, I will make sure it's not built there,
right,
or whatever. But for whatever reason, Kerry Russell just, like, as it always happens in these things,
how
Kerry
could
Russell
you
instantly believes the worst of Skeeter. There's a funny moment that was quite emphasized in the trailer where, after hearing the story about him being incinerated, Sandler is driving and he's going through the radio, and all the songs are about fire or burning or burning up or what burning for you. He goes to Home Depot.
What that scene needed, by the way, was for Terry Crews to pull up right next to him.
Yes, if he had been dancing along, that would have been great. He goes to Home Depot and gets some anti-flammable Christmas tree spray, which he then sprays in the employee's, like, that's for Christmas trees. And Adam Sandler accidentally sprays in the employee's eye and then sprays it in his own eye, I guess, as penance. So Skeeter goes to his boss's big birthday party. It's like a Hawaiian luau theme. There are all these like fire dancers and tiki torches and stuff like that. He pushes a fire dancer into the pool. Someone brings him like a flaming like ice cream treat or whatever, and he gets real scared of it. all this stuff, you know, he's just nervous. And then what should happen? But a bee stings his tongue, so he is speaking in gibberish. The story is starting to come true. Guy Pearce gives his presentation to the boss, and the presentation involves his big idea for the hotel is make it Broadway themed, like Broadway musical themed. And he does a whole musical number. It's not a good musical number, but he does a musical number. At one point, he name checks Cats.
Yeah, Cats was in there.
And that's important because not only are we in a cultural moment where Cats has suddenly become very important to all of us in all our lives, Funny People also has a prominent reference to Cats. So, you know, we, again, are the most well-timed podcast on the airwaves is us. And never forget that. So we, you know, no matter when you're listening to this, just know that
we totally nailed it in 1920s.
We nailed this timing. So they mentioned Cats. And then Russell Brand wakes up screaming because I guess he fell asleep like during the presentation. And then Sandler gets up to give his presentation and he's speaking in gibberish, but Russell Brand can translate just like the robot could. So again, the story's coming true. And Sandler, honest to God, I could not tell you what this pitch is. It's the vaguest, like, don't try and make a hotel like home, because if you wanted to be home, you could just stay home. Kids love hotels because there's like, possibility, and my dad always told me that your only limit was imagination. It's gibberish. Like, he's talking in gibberish, and it's the content is gibberish. Like, this is nonsense. This almost feels like a bot wrote an inspirational, like, we gotta say, like the speech that Adam Sandler gives at the end of Mr. Deeds about how, like, what did you want to be when you were a kid? Like, that sort of thing. It's like if a bot listened to 100 hours of speeches like that from movies and wrote a version of its own. Like, it's very, it's very half-assed. So he is of course given the promotion, to manage the hotel. And Kendall, Guy Pearce's character faints. And what do you know? This dog named Boogie comes up and starts licking him a bunch. Story keeps coming true. Jonathan Loughran, Sandler squad member, comes up and congratulates Sandler on his win. That's when Skeeter learns that they're building the hotel on the school grounds. And then they bring out this big flaming cake for Richard Griffiths, and Skeeter just takes a fire extinguisher and just utterly decimates it. And Richard Griffiths is like, you're fired. And Sandler puts two and two together and he's like, oh, fired. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, okay, I get it now. So he goes to the school, tries to insist to both the kids and Carrie Russell that he wanted nothing to do. And now he's fired. So why they would still think he has anything to do with it is beyond me. But I guess for the purposes of this plot, Carrie Russell's like, how could you, you know, just stay away, whatever.
I trusted you.
Courtney Cox shows back up. And at Sandler's place.
From Arizona.
From Arizona. She's been in Arizona. She's probably got a great tan.
This is just 5 days.
That's right.
All this stuff happens in 5 days.
Yes. And she tells Sandler that she is mad at him. But when Skeeter correctly says, he's like, you know, how could you think that I would do that? And she's like, oh, I know you wouldn't do that. And he's like, well, why are you mad at me? And I'm like, yeah, why is anyone mad at you? But she says, like, oh, and he even doesn't seem all that distraught, to be honest with you. Like, he's like, so, like, I don't want to say it's laziness, but it is just like, he still seems so good natured and like, why do people think I did this? Like, it's not like end of the road for him.
Right.
It's not like click, like, no, family. but he, she's mad at him because he told her children there's no such thing as happy endings. So she leaves, and then suddenly Sandler can hear the narrator, Jonathan Pryce, comes back in, and suddenly Sandler can talk to the narrator. Like, suddenly this is like Stranger Than Fiction.
Sure.
And Jonathan Pryce is like, you know, go get him, son, you know, whatever. I did write, I guess I'm glad these mechanics aren't explained. Like,
yeah. No.
Like, because I don't need, it's like, you know, like watching Groundhog Day recently. It's like, I don't need there to be an like a wizard put a curse on him or something like that.
No.
So. Cut to the day that the school is being demolished, even though, you know, there are all these protesters there to stop the school from being demolished. Guy Pearce is there to personally like pull, you know, push the plunger in. Nick Swardson, Sandler Squad, is there as a construction dude. Turns out, so Richard Griffiths goes to the zoning board, to get the final permit or whatever. And it turns out Skeeter is already there because the head of that board is one of the girls who used to torment him in high school. And they decide, like, oh no, actually we're going to deny you your permit to build on that schoolyard. But we can put you on this nice piece of beachfront property. And he's just like, that was my first choice for the location, but you said that it wasn't available. And Skeeter's just like, well, like, we just made it available. Total nonsense, total deus ex machina. Like, just like, oh, like, don't worry, there was never any problem. Everyone wins. Ha ha ha.
It all worked out.
Exactly. So, and then it's like, oh no, he and Carrie Russell, it's like they got to rush to the school to stop it from being demolished because Guy Pearce isn't picking up his phone. So they get on a motorcycle. Apparently, according to the credits, Blake Clark is this motorcyclist.
Okay.
Who they like steal from. I could not tell from looking, but I assume Sandler Squad member, Blake Clark. So as they're, you know, it's like, and they, you know, it's like as they get on the motorcycle and they're riding, we get these little snippets of their ride that like sort of intermingle with like the bedtime story versions of them. So it's like he's Sir Fix-a-Lot on a horse with the mermaid, and then they run through these cyclists and suddenly it's like they're riding the Ferrari horse through these horses. They ride through a golf course, like a driving range, and like instead of golf balls, it's like the space thing where they're dodging asteroids.
Right.
And then they ride the motorcycle through a train that Rob Schneider is on, and they grab the wallet back from him. I guess just, you know, it's like a Swiss watch, this movie. You just gotta like, you gotta tie up every loose end.
It's like poetry.
So, and then Adam Sandler does a totally sweet move that Xander Cage himself would be proud of, which is he rides his motorcycle up, jumps off, swings on the tetherball like string, like around the pole to kick Guy Pearce away from the detonator. Again, Xander Cage somewhere is beaming. And to artificially at the last minute, like as though it's like, what do you take us for, movie? Like, you think we're going to buy this? They try to artificially drum up more drama by having the two kids, Courtney Cox's two kids, inside the school.
Like, oh, they're in danger.
And it's like, first of all, how did you lose your kids, Courtney Cox? I'm so sorry. Skeeter wouldn't have lost them. Second of all, like, what the fuck? Like, again, like, it's just at the last second, like, oh, like, are you worried? Like, is anyone, did that fool any person in the audience, do you think? Like, maybe a very small child would be like, oh no, I hope they make it out okay. But
I mean, are these kids, I guess their mom's very like progressive and like, or like, you know, trying to be
she
political.
She seems like a helicopter parent.
Yeah. I mean, is this a moment where they're like trying to protest it? Like they're like doing like a tree hugger type
right,
thing?
Right. Maybe. But she also, she knows that the building is going to be exploded. Yeah. So like, I don't know. Anyways. So turns out the school's going to stay. Hooray. everyone applauds. And then the little girl who the little boy, Sandler's nephew, has a crush on.
Oh, right.
Runs up and is like, oh, I need to show my appreciation. And the kid, she gives him a kiss. I did like she has the very realistic reaction afterwards where she kisses him and then she's like, rah, and like runs away. Like she like screams because like I guess they think it's like gross or weird.
It's very cute.
Yeah, Sandler kisses Carrie Russell, and she also has like a good like that's actually like a sweet moment where she's just like go for it. Like it's like it's not they don't try to play that like a super like romantic moment. It is just sort of like a like oh hey like I like you like oh I like you too like all right why not like
it is it strikes a nice tone at the end there. Yeah,
yeah, Carrie right. Russell
because he's all about like oh good for you little buddy yeah and then Russell's there and he's like oh yeah what about me should I go for kissing the mermaid after all she's like yeah dude go for
yeah.
it
yeah yeah Carrie Russell is great I love her
she's a treasure
huge crush on her so anyways they start Sandler starts a small family business he calls it Marty's Motel. And, you know, it's like the whole family, you know, like hanging out, Bugsy eating all the s'mores or whatever. Turns out Guy Pearce, again, this is just like, they just did no work to set this up because it makes no sense that these two people would work. Like, there are other jobs. Like, if you get demeaned, like, if you're down to that level, like, just go work in, like go work in some other service industry thing. I can't imagine they're paying you that well. But anyways, Guy Pearce and Lucy Lawless both are working for Sandler. It's like, did he win them? Like, did they come in the bargain? Like, I don't understand. Did their contracts get sold to him? I don't get it.
Just to twist the knife a little bit.
Yeah, it's very strange. And yeah, it's like, it's like the end of Ever After where it's like, oh, she made her wicked stepmom like work in the kitchens or whatever. It's just maybe that's the point. You know what? I bet you that's what Adam Shankman would tell us. Like it has a fairy tale logic to it. It's not probably buying it, Adam, Sandler or Shankman. So Russell Brand marries, Teresa Palmer, Nottingham. Becomes a nurse at the school? Like, I don't understand.
I didn't get what... I mean, I was wondering, like, is this got to do with, you know, his phobia of, like wanting to be like, very clean?
Being a school nurse is not clean.
He just goes the... Yeah. It's like the guy who wanted to be a veterinarian but opened a chain of slaughterhouses. It's like, oh, you went the other way on that one. I forgot. There is this second fart joke because eating all the s'mores, Bugsy farts, and Jonathan Pryce goes, I think Bugsy's trying to tell us that our tale is at an end. And I'm like, I guess, man. Like, it's as good a sign as any.
Yeah, they make some other, like, nasty Bugsy joke where he's like, he's eating, like, this, eating that thing and it's like shit everywhere in the cage, essentially.
Yeah.
Please clean it up,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, like, please clean Bugsy's cage. And then Skeeter and Jill, Carrie Russell, get married alongside... This is all told in storybook form, like the beginning of the movie.
Then have a bunch more little guinea pigs?
Bugsy, they do it... They specifically mention that it's a double wedding with Bugsy and I guess like Lady Bugsley, but we never see... We have not seen a female version of Bugsley up till now.
I wasn't sure if they were implying that, okay, Bugsy, you know... reproduced or if Jill and Skeeter like had a little bundle of love of their own because there's lots of guinea pigs that pop up and I'm like, okay, you know what? She's a woman. She's not, you know.
Who knows?
Yeah.
But that is the end of Bedtime Stories. So, wow. What a film. What a motion picture.
What a journey.
You know, there's just not that much to be said about this movie. It's totally, I was expecting... Like an Old Dogs, or because this has a 26 on Rotten Tomatoes, and I have to assume if this same movie came out today, it would be treated a little bit more charitably by critics. Because there's nothing about this movie. I understand he was like a punching bag for a long time, and still somewhat is for his own movies. I have no desire to go to bat for this movie, and so I won't really. But it is crazy that something this inoffensive.
If it came out today, it would be like, you know, like, oh, Disney Plus is like, you know, just in time for like the new year, like the new Sandler thing on Disney Plus, and then you'd watch it, you have a nice little nap, and it'd be fine.
Like, yeah, if this came out on Disney Plus, people would be like, sure, okay, yeah. Not bad, like.
Yeah, everything about it, like even the artwork from it, like just reminds me, like this just feels like a Disney Plus.
I just watched that Noelle thing on Disney Plus with Anna Kendrick and Bill Hader. I like very much Anna Kendrick and Bill Hader. That movie is not so good. I would happily watch Bedtime Story over it. Bedtime Story is not an awful movie.
No.
It seems like just kind of a whiff given its high concept.
Yeah, I mean, it's a high concept. And like, I mean, you have to assume that some of it is, and it doesn't hurt the movie as much as I could have imagined, I guess, but like you have to assume that some of the, you know, the lack of the fact that it's not as memorable for us, say, is that it is a kids movie, and the movie doesn't exactly feel like he's holding back. Like it's not like, oh, like if this same concept, but with like, That's My Boy levels of raunch or something, like would make it good. It's
right.
Like, it's not that. It's just that, you know, it's just sort of like a, it's just sort of right down the middle, like just sort of like, you know, if I had kids and watched this with them, I would not at all be mad. Like, I wouldn't be like, oh God, what are they rotting kids' brains with? Like, you know, it wouldn't upset me if the kids were into it. It's just like, oh, like the, you know, it's fine.
It's fine.
Adam Shankman never, it's just this weird outlier because it is a Disney movie. It is a kids' movie. Blended is kind, I mean, and we talked about Just Go With It, but, and so I guess maybe Just Go With It applies as well, but like, you know, Blended is kind of the closest thing to, it's not as high concept, but as far as like the focus on kids and family,
right,
Blended probably comes the closest to this. And I think that one, because I've seen it more, maybe that one strikes for me a better balance of like, there are things that I actually find very funny in that movie, while also the like sort of saccharine stuff, family stuff, really. Although, I don't know. Having said that, I do kind of, maybe because I'm so used to, I watch so many movies and I'm so used to these formulas, there was something that made it go down easy that it didn't, the movie almost didn't seem to think that I would be fooled by, or that I would be like, it didn't try to sell these emotional beats like Click or something. It wasn't just like, oh my God, family's so important. Like at the end when he's just like, I'm not going anywhere, I love you kids. It's like, yeah, it seemed like everything's been going pretty well. Like, like you love these kids, they love you. Like you have a good relationship with your sister, you got this new girlfriend. Like everything seems to be going pretty, like it's just a movie that like doesn't seem to have, like the conflict seems to be like, yeah, we'll get through it. You know, like it's all kind of like a shrug.
For sure.
So maybe it's like a, you know, baby's first Sandler hang. Like maybe that's what it's like. Its goal is. And I mean, we're now at the point where, cause we're 11 years since it's been released, and I have not encountered these people, but it's certainly possible that there is a generation of people who grew up with this movie who think it's good. I don't know that for sure. That's something that, like, just knowing quality has nothing to do with that, obviously. Our generation likes fucking Hook. So we don't have a leg to stand on.
Wilson said, staring at me with daggers.
That's right.
No, it's true, though. I mean, I imagine, yeah, like, being, like, let's say 6, 7, 8, maybe a little older than that, and then what if, like, yeah, like a Bedtime Story or like Blended, say, was just like a part of your childhood rotation. I could see that being reliable standbys to watch and enjoy at that age.
Yeah. I mean, if I was a small kid, I probably would have gone nuts for this. Like, I probably would have been like really into it. Yeah, I don't know. It's not a movie that has a particular place in Sandler's filmography. I mean, he doesn't, you know, it's the last thing before Funny People.
It'd be the last PG thing. Well, not counting
Blended PG-13 or PG?
It's PG-13.
Okay,
but this would be, like, I guess, like the last explicitly family effort, with the exception of the Transylvanias.
Right. Yes. And so, yeah, you've got that. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, what do you, Austin? You got big thoughts on Bedtime Stories?
Nah.
No,
no, I don't like these kind of movies. Just aren't for me.
Adam Sandler movies.
No,
I got bad news.
No, I don't know.
You've done all these episodes of a podcast.
Like, I think it's something where, like, sometimes like family friendly movies, I just can't like, I can't get into them. I mean, it's just like. And I feel jaded to say that. Like, it's like, I could never get into this. I mean, there's sometimes I can get into them, but it's just aimed too much at, like, it felt like it was aimed too much at more, like, you know.
Small kids.
Yeah, 3 to 5 year olds with their family.
Well, it's weird, too, because I feel like, and now that the kind of, now saying something is a Disney movie, it tells you something, but it tells you something different. I feel like, the idea, I feel like in 2008, even, the idea of, like, Happy Madison... I can see Happy Madison folks telling themselves, like, we're going to make this movie with Disney. We're going to make a Happy Madison version of a Disney movie. Like, Disney was more synonymous then with just, like, kids' movies. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, like, you know, you're gonna do a Disney thing. So it's like, that's how, like, mm-hmm. I think, like, it's weirdly, like, again, Disney movie means something different now. But mm-hmm. back then, it's probably Sandler thinking, like, I've never made a Disney movie. I'll make a Disney film.
Yeah, that's the thing to celebrate here is that, like, you know, you still have Jonathan Loughran and Alan Cover.
Showing up. You still have Schneider doing an inappropriate, like, cultural appropriation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you do. You have him. Yeah, you have Schneider doing a cultural appropriation. Yeah.
I had really wondered if, like, Hubie Halloween was maybe going to be a potential, like, entry into the family-friendly canon, but it's him investigating a murder, so I'm like, maybe not.
Maybe it's like a murder of crows or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I'll just jump to our categories here. So we've got product placement watch. You know, as usual, we've sort of like been trying to keep up with these. There's not a ton in this. You know, we have Cinnabon. We've got Kingsford Charcoal. What else? Ferrari, I guess.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. I think Home Depot.
This is simultaneously Sandler Squad and product placement. When you see that clip of the Suite Life of Zach and Cody.
Suite Life of Zach and Cody.
That is a Disney Channel show.
Yes.
So that's Disney pimping out their own.
Yeah, Buzz Lightyear's there. I guess that's product placement.
Yeah.
It's all Disney's all product placement.
Right.
So that's it for product placement. So then Sandler Squad, we of course have Courtney Cox. We have got Jonathan Loughran. We have got Rob Schneider. We have got Nick Swardson. We have got Alan Covert. We've got Blake Clark. Maybe we're counting Cole Dylan Sprouse.
We mentioned Courtney. Sorry.
Yeah, we mentioned
Nick Swardson.
I said Nick Swardson.
Well, yeah, Kerry Russell never came back to the fold.
No.
Shame.
No, it's a bummer. I mean, we got these four new Netflix movies, Kerry.
Yeah.
She's
done with The American, so, you know.
That's right.
Slate's clean. I like her in this movie. I wouldn't say this is like a banging chemistry fest with Sandler, but that's not really. It's not so much like, oh, they're not like they're just not good together. It's more like, well, what do they have to do?
Yeah, she doesn't. I mean, she's too good for this movie.
Yes,
but she has a very easy, a very easy rapport with Sandler, and she. I think a lot of the slumming, you know, we've kind of struggled to come up with a coherent, consistent definition of the slumming love interest throughout this podcast, but I think, and I guess it's a little bit like, you know it when you see it,
right?
Type deal. It's a little subjective, but I think with like Kerry Russell, the reason that it's not slumming so much is that she doesn't have that moment. It's really comparing with like Veronica Vaughn and Virginia Vennett, where like these people have this moment where like a switch gets flipped.
Happy, I didn't see it go
and
in.
Suddenly they're just like, oh my God, like, and they're suddenly like swooning over these like idiots. And Kerry Russell doesn't really have that. She
even their big climactic kiss almost feels more friendly than romantic.
And she has like a very, like no BS.
Yes.
Sort of demeanor about her that she doesn't seem to be giving it. Like she sees it's almost more like a proto Drew Barrymore in Blended thing where she sees how good he is with the kids.
Yeah.
And that's what sort of attracts her to him. And like, that's kind of, and it's like, it's got a, they don't emphasize it too much because, again, it's a Disney kids movie. But, like, there's a sweetness there. And I think she's technically our loving love interest. We'll put her there in the category because she's excellent and too good to play. She should be starring roles, not supporting roles like this. But you know what? She is a welcome presence in this movie.
Absolutely.
I'm always happy to see her.
I'd be curious to, like I would, to see them in a different context. Maybe like a more down to earth, less like high concept movie where they're just able to like be together and maybe have some decent like banter, like not and like on equal footing banter too, not like what we later see with him and Aniston and we've already seen with him and Barrymore. Like,
yeah.
Like that'd be cool. But, you know, maybe, yeah. Let's see what Netflix can do with it.
This name just caught me off guard. I think it's because he's a former sports player, Bill Romanowski.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he was in Longest Yard. And he's also been in Benchwarmers. Like, I'm just kind of like poking at. I also thought it was very funny that there are eight or so women cast as the Honky Tonk Woman, the Hokey Pokey Woman. And there's actually one of them that's been in like at least four plus Sandler films. Just funny,
really?
Like the side players. Yeah, Dana Goodman.
Huh.
She's been in Just Go With It, The Ridiculous Six.
Oh,
Bedtime.
Dana Goodman, welcome to the Sandler squad. Oh,
Bedtime
my God.
Bedtime Stories, and That's My Boy.
Oh, she's like, she must be buds with the Happy
And
Madison
you don't mess
people,
with the Zohan.
Because she's in House Bunny, Bucky Larson.
Oh, like, wow.
Yeah, okay. Dana Goodman, welcome.
Nope, no IMDb profile picture, but you're in there somewhere.
Hell
and
yeah.
This other Hokey Pokey.
She's the one who like eats all the pasta like in the restaurant. Like she's just like, you're really skinny to Carrie Russell or whatever.
Oh,
like that weird
that's
bit.
That's right.
And there's a second person in the Hokey Pokey squad. I wonder if there's like if they are part of just like they're all just in a clique or if they are like Jonathan Loughran's wife or something.
Yeah, I mean they all like I mean it's like having the actress in Mr. Deeds who plays the Preston Blake's maid who also shows up in Anger Management as like the waitress in one scene. It's mm-hmm. They do like to keep these things in house and have these people come back. So that's interesting. Did you have any other names or is it just
Julia Lee Wolov, also in That's My Boy and Just Go With It. And the House Bunny and the Ridiculous Six. So and Hotel Transylvania. So there's something there.
All right, stand up, take a bow.
Yeah.
All right, so we got some new members of the Sandler squad. And I think, I mean, if y'all are done, I mean, I think that's all we got to say about Bedtime Stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's totally fine. It's inoffensive. It will not harm you. It won't, won't rot your brain. But yeah, it's very interesting because we've got a long way to go with Sandler's career. We might be at the halfway point or something with his like starring films, but we're entering interesting territory here because the next film that we're going to talk about, which after we quit recording, we should talk more about how we're going to record it because it's a pretty big one.
Yeah.
Funny People, the 2009 Judd Apatow film. That's a kind of a, I think, a really pivotal moment. It has, since 2009, it's more and more revealed itself to be kind of a really pivotal, crucial moment in Sandler's career. It's a film that is quite controversial among people. Like, I think people, I've heard all different range of opinions on it. Without spoiling too much, it's a film I love very dearly. I'm really, really excited to talk about it. Hopefully we'll have some cool guests or guests on there to speak on it. But it kind of, in a weird way, Bedtime Stories is almost a last hurrah because even though he makes, I mean, we still have the Grown Ups movies and Jack and Jill to come, but this is like, Sandler, more so even than with Punch Drunk Love, almost like turning a page and being like, all right, well, like this is, it's almost like a... In some ways, like a state of the union from Sandler on his career or it feels like a big statement about something.
Right. You're ending a chapter and beginning a new one, I feel like, with Funny People and what comes after that.
And we'll talk way more in depth about this on the Funny People episode. But it's almost a moment where like I think what Funny People does is that Funny People reminds people that Sandler is a great actor. And it makes people, I weirdly think Funny People catalyzes a lot of anger towards Sandler mm-hmm. among people. Like, I think for the most part, people could just avoid Click and or pronounce you Chuck and Larry and just rip on them and think they're bad movies. But after Funny People, it all starts to seem a little bit more personal against him. Like, oh, almost like he's making these bad movies to spite me,
right,
the critic or the audience member. And so I think that Funny People kind of just like puts a match to some of these things that we're running underneath. So yeah, it's going to be a great discussion, I think. And I think that'll almost certainly, unless we fuck it up, that'll be one of our better, more interesting episodes, because there's a lot to talk about.
We've been talking about a Funny People episode since the beginning. I'm really excited.
Yeah, it's going to be great. But until then, as always, we are the Billy Gilmore Podcast. I am Wilson Smith.
I am Chris Giles.
And I am Austin Culp.
Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time for Funny People.